Your job is to set a precedent. I think that it would be best for this space to do this in order to grow, and then building momentum until the community agrees with you enough and is doing it on their own.
Hey, this is Nick Armstrong, and you are watching the Founded Info Co. podcast. Every episode, we get a chance to talk to an innovative mover and shaker in our own community. And today, we are here with Venia Logan from Socially Constructed. Venia, tell us about your business.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I am the founder of a company called sociallyconstructed.online, and I build online cultural spaces for clients. I'm an online community architect. But then that's only kind of one part, right? Like I'm a consultant and I work to build online spaces for a better, healthier virtual world, but I can only do so much, right? So I also use the sites for the clients, communities that I teach. I teach community managers the social science of how online communities work. So all of this to be, to kind of help build a stronger virtual and localized world, make it easier for us to communicate and talk and figure out this internet thing.
So when you say online communities, do you mean that this is like a company, like an HP or somebody like that would come in and say, we really want a virtual hub for our employees, and then you would build that? Or are you talking about completely deconstructed from reality? These are online only communities.
Yeah, great question. I tend to specialize in virtual worlds. So communities who are being built around a brand. So HP is a really good example. And HP might say, hey, we have this new product gathering coming up where we have open source technology, basically technology that they want to give to everyone in the world. And you say, great, how do you want to interface with the people using your product in order to help develop it? How would you like the community to tell you what they want in the software? So that could be a community of practice. So we reach out to other developers and we bring them together and we share the code. And then the developers say, it'd be really nice if we had this feature. So we add that feature using community instead of this pass and go between HP, the company, and their limited engineers, and the larger audience saying, hey, how long is this feature going to take? Well, now the community can go out, write that feature, submit it to HP, and get paid for that contribution.
It sounds like a really cool iterative process. Outside of an HP, where there's a lot of resources and a lot of engineers, super highly technical people, have you found success with this model in other markets?
So HP was an example that we went with, but in my market specifically, I tend to do it in academia and e-learning. Like I said, I primarily focus on teaching community managers how to build online communities through social science. So I focused a lot on e-learning and course-based companies. So for instance, I had this YouTuber, his name is Dan the Fireman. And he's absolutely incredible. He has this amazing community. And we built a workbook together. And that workbook included this entirely new writer's program. And it's just kickstarted an entirely new section of his business by allowing his community to come together around the smart writer basic training principles. And now we're teaching an entire community how to build a stronger motorcycle culture all over the world, which is absolutely incredible. I felt really gracious for being a part of that project and bringing new life into his business. Even as a YouTuber, we put community at the center.
So marketing community has made a lot about user-generated content. And this sounds like a really good way to encourage user-generated content. But as most of us who have dealt with the online community space know, that engagement falls off as soon as there's, a little bit of a gap in content or a little bit of a leeway or something happens and a lot of engagement falls. How do you get that participation to recur on an ongoing basis?
Oh, that is a great question. That is the question of the ages, right? I think, and this might be very helpful. If you're listening to this podcast, the one thing I want you to take away from this is that community in and of itself is a unit of culture. You are creating a certain set of boundaries around your community. Here's how you come in. Here's the way that you participate. Here's what we, the business, want from you. And here's what we can give you, the community, right? So you've set for yourself a certain finite space. And within that space, you are building a culture. And culture happens day to day, right? So when you perform an action, and this is what I want you to remember, this is the shortcut for anyone building a community. Your job is to set a precedent. I think that it would be best for this space to do this in order to grow. And then building momentum until the community agrees with you enough and is doing it on their own. You are setting precedent and building momentum. So when it comes to the engagement trap, we like to call it the engagement trap. You brought up this idea of community generated content, which in marketing is this idea of going out and interviewing your audience, asking for their opinions, finding experts, and then you put together a blog of everyone's opinions, and then you deep dive into one of those opinions and you interview that person and you create a podcast and a video. This is community generated content. There's a tweak here because remember, you are setting precedent and then building momentum. Would you rather, as a marketer, want to go out, interview all those people, submit an opinion piece, talk to one person, and then move on to the next person and never talk to those individuals again? Or would you rather have a program where people can literally generate their own content, come to you, you can publish that content under your banner, and your community looks all the healthier as a result? Are you creating user-generated content? Or are you curating your users' content? Set precedent. I want to curate your content and then build momentum until they're producing content for you. That's just one small program that you can generate in online community that is more authentic, allows for a greater sense of engagement, encourages people to participate because their voice matters, and it elevates your community to the role of your business so that one is not subservient to the other. And eventually what you want is your community to surround your business, and your business becomes a node of resources for the community to achieve its goals. It just so happens that your business is achieving its goals because the community is thriving.
What are some of the best techniques for getting that to occur? Is it asking questions, or is it events, online events, or is it, panels? Is it community conversation groups? What does that look like?
Yeah, also a really, really great question, because a lot of people tend to get, especially where community is concerned, we tend to get very into the weeds. What are the programs? What are the actions? What are the tactics that we are taking in order to build this community? I want the beginners in community to step back a little bit because, again, as I'm saying, you're building a culture, right? Content is king. We've heard that all the time, all over marketing. Content is king. Context is queen. There is a royal family here. And if you ignore the context that you're choosing to build, you are ignoring the opportunities for your community to interact with you. So if you want to build events, awesome. But are those events webinars, or are those events group discussions where your community members can interact and add value and context? And further, where is that discussion going? Great, you've created a webinar, you've created a gathering where 12 people can really engage and connect, and you have this sense of community coming out of the meeting. But then what do you do next with that content? You throw it up as a recorded webinar on YouTube, completely unedited. Are you getting a lot of views on that content? Probably not. And the reason for that is because content is king. Bringing people together to have a webinar is king. But you learned that if you open it up for your audience to have those discussions and you create a roundtable format, the context made that content better, right? But then you take that another step, right? Instead of publishing it as a recorded webinar on YouTube, take some time to splice it out, find those hero comments, those nice, wonderful shorts from your community, clip it, and then send it to that community member and say, hey, you said this absolutely incredible thing. So we went ahead and clipped it. We're going to toss it on our TikTok. We're going to toss it on all of our social media. We would absolutely love it if you could tell us, what are you working on right now that you would like attention placed to? And once you do, once you have that context and you notice that that person came to your gathering and said that absolutely genius, chef's kiss thing, you can now use that as content in the context of their success. Now, what that's going to do, because it's got your logo down in the bottom right, is it's going to make people very, very aware that this person's success is at least in partial due to your platform. And here's my next shortcut for you. If you want to be a giant, find someone else to stand on your shoulders. This is how you do it, especially when it comes to those programs and events. Always think about, okay, we think this program might be nice. This is our king. What's our queen now? What is our context? How can we take it that one step further?
Do you find success in a particular size of community, and in, especially in terms of like regulation and moderation for themselves, or do you have to add in additional moderators once you get to a certain number?
Yeah, great question. Oh, this is one of my favorite questions. I'm going to try to not get into the academic weeds, but I am going to introduce some concepts. Have you heard of Dunbar's number before?
Yeah, it's the number of connections that you can hold in your brain before the other people start falling out.
Exactly. Yeah. So Dunbar's number is kind of antiquated in the academic fields, but it's still very useful in this discussion as a way to kind of conceive of your community, right? So the Dunbar's number is about 150 people. So you as an individual, right? Me, Venia, you, Nick, can really only conceive of and regularly adapt to about 150 people in our regular daily lives, right? Which is to suggest that as a community grows organically, we'll need to find shortcuts or structures for managing those relationships. And when you're small, you don't want anything getting in the way of your communication or your cultural discussions or your talks. So you may not really have a need for HubSpot or a community intelligence platform like Common Room. You don't need the technology. Just pick a platform, make mistakes. You don't need to hire me to build a community of 24 people. And that's really all you need. Just go find three people who are like you, three people all three of you look up to, and then three people you think you can help each. And now you have 24 people. That right there is a community, right? You didn't need me for that. But you'll reach an inflection point. And I'm actually doing some active anthropological research on this, actually. I can give you the survey. I'm actually looking to interview specific community members and community surveys. I assume Link can be placed into the boot, so to speak. So I have this idea called the six burdens of community growth. And these are universal burdens or hurdles that every community needs to go through once you reach that inflection point of growth. You've built everything organically. You've collected. Dunbar's number is starting to come into effect. At some point in time, you need help and you need to expand. You need to scale it somehow. But you're going to run in to achieve six potential problems with that growth. First and foremost is going to be you, yourself, contributions. How much work is available to be done and how many people do you have available to do that work versus how big your community is getting? So it's this reward and work problem. And we might view this as a good thing. It's a good problem to have. There's just too much work because we're growing too fast. But the problem is now that work isn't getting done, and the reward is getting so large that people are coming in expecting something of you, and then you fail to do it. We're seeing this explicitly with Blue Sky right now, the new Twitter program. We'll see how this goes. But we also saw it not even 6 months ago with Mastodon, right? they grew too fast and too quickly. People didn't understand exactly what the service they were getting onto was. They just knew that they had to leave Twitter, and Mastodon seemed to be the place people were going, so they immigrated. And then when they arrived, they're like, wait, I have to pick a server? Wait, what's this about open source? Wait, why is it just chat? I thought I could just communicate with anyone who is on the platform. Now I require two-way invites? And people were like, wait, so this isn't like Twitter. We had a diasporic emigration from a platform that had already scaled and was already quote-unquote working into a platform that was working really, really well for what it did. And because it scaled too fast, they ran into an unintuitive work reward problem, right? So that's one of those big issues. And there are six more. I'm not going to go into it too far because I don't want to waste a lot of time. But there, if you're going to scale, you have to create infrastructure in order for you to solve that problem. And that's exactly what I do. That's my job, right? Is to come in and be like, look at this amazing thing that you've created. How do we modify your brand to make it more community oriented? How do we create a marketing strategy that achieves your business goals in the context of your community goals? How do we select the technology and the platforms to best alleviate the struggles you have in your processes? That's what a lot of people fail with. They need technology that does a thing. But no, you can build a process for that thing. You can break the technology all you want, but if the process isn't being managed, that's not a thing. So you have to build the right infrastructure. And then after that, how are you going to measure it and make sure that when you grow again, you're set up for that time? That's what an online community architect does for you. That's what I do.
Yeah. And I've heard you say several really key things that the leaders sort of have to establish the norms, that the processes and procedures have to fall in line with what the expectations of the community are and has to work for the community. This is an interesting conversation. I hope that we can catch more from you at Founded in FOCO 2024. How did you get into this? What drove you into the community space?
Yeah, so I will let you know, this is a bit raw now. It used to not be. But recently I had a discussion with this absolutely incredible conference called All Things in Moderation, done by the Australian Community Managers, where they asked exactly this question. And I've been thinking about it a lot. I am now 13 years post-transition in the LGBTQ community. I'm a trans woman, and I came out 13 years ago, and I'm done. Like, my transition was finished years ago, and I've discovered that I started my world on YouTube. Because my local college, I grew up in Cheyenne, Wyoming, hop, skip, and a jump from here in Fort Collins, right? I grew up there. And when I went to the local college, I had a lot of people complaining about my use of public restrooms. And I was brought into human resources for the university. And I was sat down, and it was a very intimidating situation, of course. And they're like, listen, we know your rights. We know you're allowed to use the women's restroom. We can't stop you from doing that. The problem is the college student body doesn't know your rights. So we can't do anything for you. We cannot give you your rights because no one actually on this campus knows them. And I'm like, okay, so it sounds like you've got a PR campaign on your hands. And they said, that's a no-go. We are going to put you on the stage. Because if you want your rights, you have to advocate for them. We'll give you that stage, but we're putting you up there. So I'm like, wait a minute. So it felt really weird because, like, a lot of minority identities struggle with this idea of having to fight tooth and nail to get their stage. I was unfairly thrown on to mine. And that's kind of what feels really raw, is because I'm 13 years now into a very public career because my college threw me onto a stage And I had the tenacity, wherewithal, and gumption to say, well, in for a penny, in for a pound. If you're going to force me to advocate for myself on college campus, I'm just going to do it on YouTube. So I started a YouTube channel, and that YouTube channel garnered 4,400 other transgender individuals. And they asked for resources. And I'm like, I have no idea. So we created this other channel called Trans Youth Channel. And Trans Youth Channel is seven of us trans youths basically talking about and advocating for ourselves. That turned into a nonprofit because we discovered that that our audience just wasn't receiving the resources they needed. So we created Rescue.net, a organization specifically for LGBTQ individuals who weren't out yet, closeted, stealth, in some way, shape, or form, not able to express. That turned into me going, I don't know how to run this nonprofit organization. What am I doing? So I went to college, I went to school, and they're like, we don't know how to run an online community. Take journalism, marketing. I don't know. How about science, business, communications? So I ended up taking all of them because they didn't know what to do with me. And then after that, I'm sitting here at an inflection point of my life 9 years later, and I'm like, I don't actually know how the internet works. I spent 9 years building an online community for a bunch of people, and I don't know how the internet works. So I went into marketing and I applied my community management career. Now I've been doing it for marketing, for academia. I've just been building all of these careers. And 13 years later, here I am building online communities for people. And most of the talks that I've been giving are people asking, how do you build a safe space? It's been 13 years. How are we going to create a better virtual world if we are building online communities just willy-nilly just for the community ROI, when in all actuality, these online communities are the secret sauce, the key to solving polarization, to solving hyper-localization, to solving extreme views and opinions in our online communities? 13 years. And that's how I got started. And now I feel like I'm right back around asking the same questions, but this time I kind of maybe have answers.
Talk about being voluntold. Yeah. Wow. And that's a common thing that happens to folks across their identities. And you have any sort of additional identity, that additional work is often put back on you as an individual. So good on you for being willing and able to do that. it's important work to be sure. But we seem to, as a culture, come back around to a spot of more intentionality around how we develop the communities and what things are not just like the rules, right? It's about the processes and how do we have these conversations. And so do you find that additional work, as a trans woman, is onerous, or that the questions and the resources now are more developed than they had been in the past, and so that those conversations are easier to provide referrals to all of the different online toolkits for developing safe spaces and communities?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that the industry, especially within the queer portion of the nonprofit and community support space, we've come really far in 10 years. And I think that a lot of times it doesn't really look like that, because when you think about queer LGBTQIA spaces, oftentimes it jumps straight to either the interpersonal sphere with Potty Panic and how people are dealing with it, or the political sphere where people are doing justifyingly horrible, horrifying laws. But when you look at a lot of the online communities that are flourishing, that have found those careful boundaries, set precedents for healthy community spaces, and built momentum to create those safety nets in their infrastructure, I think we have really, really come far. There's one community manager in the space that I highly recommend looking into. Her name is Abiola, and her last name escapes me right now, but she's a DEIB specialist in online community. It's her job to basically go through and audit and review a lot of your policies, right? I often refer to her when people have questions in this regard, like how do we make sure on paper that we are transparent enough to people of color, to queer individuals, to Pacifica Islander people? How do we do that? She's got some absolutely incredible resources, and we've made great strides in online community development for minority spaces.
That's excellent. Is there a particular, beyond finding the expert, is there a particular set of processes or rules that seem to work really well, and a particular resource that you find is more on par with developing online communities than, say, like an in-person community?
I mean, Abiola is obviously a really fantastic resource as far as DEIB is concerned. I also recommend looking into the open source communities, specifically Kubernetes and the Chaos Project, because both of them have DEIB initiatives that come wholesale. Like, it's all Creative Commons. You can go take their policies from their own GitHub repositories if you'd like, just copy and paste, you know? So I think that's really wonderful. As far as that goes, I, on my YouTube channel, I'm going to be publishing that talk that I discussed earlier with All Things in Moderation, where I offer the guiding principle that I have for safe spaces, which is exclusivity breeds inclusivity. Don't expand your services to match, diversify them, create a second space for those individuals. And then I offer two models, which is power distance, and then the socio-ecological model, two very academic models, very well recognized, very well understood. And then using that, I put forward a specific process of establishing community membranes of exclusivity in order to build your community larger and larger and larger. That video, I'll have that published probably in the next week or two. I'm not really too sure when this is going to come out, so it might already be out right now, but it's going to be published on my YouTube channel in the next week or two.
Vinia, what are you reading right now that we should also seek some inspiration from?
Oh, and this is very specific for Fort Collins, especially. One moment.
Okay.
And for those listening, if you don't actually see, I'm kind of hanging out at my ridiculously overcrowded bookshelf. So there's this book that I highly recommend as a start to anything, whether you're doing physical communities, virtual communities, it doesn't matter. I highly recommend this book. It's called Community, The Structure of Belonging by Peter Block. And this book is largely about associative living local here to Fort Collins. We have for the university a program called the Center for Public Deliberation. Sure you've heard of it. It's basically an organization as part of the college that brings together the community in order to discuss tough problems in the local environment. And this book is a guiding light for that principle and that process. So oftentimes, if you think about the concepts in this book, like the abundance mindset, this idea that we no longer live in a stringent world, we live in one of abundance, and that causes extreme problems that are very different from what we faced before, this is a really, really good option. I'm also reading Adrian Spires' Accidental Community Manager, but that's more for people who actually want to get started in community. And if you do want to get started in community, I definitely want to talk to you. I love mentoring and helping people out with that. So I'll stop talking now. But
I was laughing because Accidental Community Manager seems to be the common pathway for most community managers. They're just like thrown into that role because they seem to be able to corral a crowd.
Yeah. Exactly. I like to say that our profession is the profession of the mother hen. But yeah, if we pull this, yeah, so this is the Accidental Community Manager. I'm going to have a book review on this. This is actually, as we're recording this, this is this Friday's video. But it's absolutely incredible. I count myself very lucky to have Adrian as a friend. And I got to say, if there's any way to break into this industry, you're going to find it in this book.
Well, thank you for your time today. Where can we find more about you and your business?
Yeah, absolutely. So my business name is my website, which is nice. My business name is sociallyconstructed.online. I build cultural spaces for clients, and then I use those spaces in order to teach the social science of online community health. You can find me on Twitter for as long as that's relevant, at Samantha Venia. And the easiest, best place to contact me is going to be my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/@sociallyconstructedonline. There's no period, but there's an at in the URL. That's really cool. I do weekly videos basically talking about everything that came out of my local community. And you can find a link to my community on my YouTube channel so that you could actually join us. And I look forward to talking to you.
That sounds like fun and something all of us can use right now, especially, as you said, in this world where everything is so diametrically opposed to each other. But online community seems to be a balm for that. So well done.
Okay.
For more great entrepreneurial advice and wisdom from our local community, visit foundedinfoco.com and check out our podcast. And coming up in March, we will have a whole new round of speakers, a lot of great community insight and inspiration that you can learn from. See you next time. Hey, thanks for listening. I'm Nick Armstrong, and this is a Founded in Foco podcast. For more great interviews like this one, join us at foundedinfoco.com.